Well, ladies and gentlemen, we got here. We've been hinting it for a while, but now that the Snyder Cut is out, we've decided to do a Zack Snyder movie. We did 300 in honor of such cut, and it's something. It's weird. It's sexual. It's weird. But we did it anyway. So, thanks for tuning in, thanks for subscribing, and thanks for listening while we tackle 300. Thanks. Welcome to Myopi Movies. This week, we try to figure out how Zack Snyder keeps getting comic book movies. We watched 300. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of host of Myopia and Riffer on Cineprov. And on panel, we have
Jeremy.
Nor Trinette. Please be on the lookout for Norcast.
It'll be out one day.
So.
And Charlie Rose.
All right, guys. So I don't know what you guys thought of when you thought of this show, but this movie is kind of perfect for it, because I remember when this movie came out and it was the biggest thing on the planet.
Yep.
And it's one of those movies like Scarface or something where everyone interprets it very, very bizarrely. And this movie is just weird. I was surprised how bored I was, actually, this time around.
Well, yeah. Everyone was so caught up in the late 90s, the early 2000s with the Frank Miller hysteria. You know, he could do no wrong. He was pretty awesome. That everyone loved him. So that's what led to this movie being made.
Yeah. And when you think of Frank Miller, hysteria is the first word that comes to mind.
Oh.
Definitely not powerful women characters. definitely not understanding for minority culture mm-hmm. or... He does have that, what is it called, terrorist? He has that terrorist comic.
I know what you're talking about, but
he's toxic, yeah. Man. He is just so toxic.
And of course, the casual homophobia. Yay!
Let's go with casual. This is pretty blunt this time around. I left this movie feeling like I'd just seen something pretty racist.
Yeah.
I didn't get the racist vibe. I got the cultural appropriation vibe, but it didn't teeter off the racism vibe. You know,
I guess we'll have to get into it.
Though. I mean, they did Goldface, but that's about it.
Yeah. They went
Goldface, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
But the only thing I remember about this movie when it came out was just the regiment, the training that all of the male actors had to do, and everyone just wanted to be them and stuff. And I was over here just... not understanding how they got that ripped in that amount of time and things like that.
Not gonna lie, the first time I saw the movie, I thought it was like prosthesis they just put on to them.
Yeah.
Well, the whole movie had that surreal quality, but yeah. I have to admit, from an artistic perspective, it really evoked the comic book feel. I mean, also, I'm sure it was probably like dirt cheap to make because the whole thing was filmed against a green screen.
Yeah.
You know?
There is nothing real in this movie. It's crazy. Yeah. It's like, it's actually kind of impressive that there's just nothing on the screen. This is, where is this in his filmography? At this point, he's done the Dawn of the Dead remake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of it, other than music videos, right? Yeah. This is, and the Patreon exclusive this month is going to be Watchmen. Which we already have in the can.
Oh, God. I bet that's aged quite well. Oh.
That movie.
Sarcasm.
Dude, and if you took away the slow motion, this movie is a tight 75 minutes. I don't know why everything has to be so slow.
It's more dramatic.
Yeah.
Some of it's fine, but not everything has to be dramatic. It doesn't. Like, and you do get your comic book scenes. Like, and if you haven't read this graphic novel, it's 80 pages.
Yep.
That whole rape thing isn't in it. We'll get there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on, man. But they do have those panel perfect kind of shots. And that's the thing about Watchmen that's interesting. It's like, literally, it looks like the panel.
Well, that's one thing Zack Snyder does, is he creates perfect, beautiful comic book scenes. Unfortunately, you can't make a movie from a collection of comic book scenes.
Yeah,
this movie.
I would argue that
you would.
With I always my girlfriend says I like to argue, so I guess it's just not.
He would in fact like to argue.
Well, no, I would argue that scene is between Zack Snyder in parallel with Ron Howard, where he sees an image and he creates a movie off of that. You know what I'm saying? But I can see your point regarding this that he wanted to teach. I mean, this in fact kind of started. Cemented Zack Snyder's into what he is now, you know, people's fandoms, things like that. Mm-hmm. But I gotta respect his artistic expression. Going close to
you're giving him source so man. Much credit.
No. I stand by my statement. He creates beautiful scenes.
Right.
Yeah.
But can't tell a freaking story.
He makes feature length trailers.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can tell it came from music videos, right? Yeah. Michael Bay's better at this, but like that's the Michael Bay thing. It's just glamour shot explosion. that's sort of kind of it. This movie did incredibly well, as we mentioned. It made something like $500 million in the theaters. It made another $250,000 in like home sales. So this was huge. And then he followed up with Watchmen and then Sucker Punch, which is awful. Sucker Punch is atrocious.
Yeah. Oh, don't even.
Yeah. I haven't seen that.
You're good. You're better for not.
Okay.
You are better for having not seen that movie before. But while we're here, who wants to give us a plot synopsis? You got it, Jared?
Oh, God. All right. Well, I mean, as detailed as you can get, the Persians are, you know, raping and pillaging across the land, and they come to Sparta, and they're like, hey, we want your land. And the Spartans are like, no. And then they fight.
And then that's a fantastic summary.
That's it. I mean, that's like the plot is just an excuse for battle scenes.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay. So the movie is very faithful to the comic. It does add a few scenes.
It does.
And we will explore that as we move through it. But it's loosely based on the Battle of Thermopylae, mainly loosely being. There was a Leonidas, there was a Thermopylae, and there was a fight against the Persians.
Well, and specifically, this is a movie based on a comic book, which is actually based on another movie.
Oh,
called
The
300 Spartans, which came out in the 60s.
Yep.
And it's like this weird Cold War-like metaphor, and it's just... And so you're watching this, and you're like, I bet you this is based in something. And you're like, no, there's not a Greek historian within 100 miles of this movie.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's mention history. This is
I did mention history.
I want to ask as a history buff. Like, I remember watching this and then being so suspenseful until, like, my friends told me, like, Nor, this actually happened in real life.
Yeah.
You know, whatever happened. And I kind of got embarrassed because, you know, I skipped that chapter in the history books and stuff. But I want to talk about the very first scene.
Uh-huh.
Where they examine the Spartan babies, the way the world.
Oh, dude, smash cut corpse pile.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like this is how the royal family inspects if they see if the babies are black, you know, so they can't be in the royal line. You know,
just that's the whole pretty much what the opera situation was about, right?
Yeah, basically, that's like
the secret corpse pit where they throw their undesirable
babies. Yeah, we know what's up. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. So that happens at all, or is that just
apparently that did happen in Sparta, though we got to be real careful with the historiosity of any of this nonsense.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because what they don't get into is the Athenians actually win this battle.
Yes.
In real life,
yes.
The Athenians are fighting a battle. This is where the story of Marathon comes from, where there's a watcher who's trying to make sure that they alert Athens the second that, because there's a water battle that they allude to, kind of, sort of, where the actual battle is taking place. And the marathon runner runs all the way from Marathon to Athens, drops dead. His name is Pheidippides, right, from, like, the shoe store, and, like, saves the day. And the Athenians actually win this. And then 50 years later, the Spartans switch sides and fight with the Persians to overtake the Athenians.
Damn.
And
I mean, we can get to the racism of this movie anyway, but like you have these pearly white, like muscular dudes, and then every minority is who they kill, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize, oh wait, Xerxes is the one that's allowing multiculturalism. Like, this is a standard Frank Miller, democracy is evil, let's smash people. Like, it's the craziest damn thing.
The Persians were inclusive, if you think about that.
They were inclusive.
Yeah. Oh my God, we root for the wrong people in this movie.
It's because the Greeks tell the story. Like, that's the whole end of it. Whoever gets to tell your history, no retreat, no surrender. Pa, ooh, ah.
And there was a line, and it captures the theme, but it was logic and reason versus mysticism and monsters.
Yeah. Come on.
I mean, that's what they say. So I mean, they worship Xerxes as a god.
Right.
But to be fair, Leonidas is supposed to be the embodiment of a god too.
True that.
We're descendants of Hercules in my Scottish, in my good Greek accent.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
We don't believe in mysticism. That's why we go to the Oracle at Delphi.
Well, let's talk about Gerard Butler. Is this right after? No, when did the Phantom of the Opera came out? That was 2000, right? Or was it earlier before?
I think that was right before this.
Was that was the cold open to this? I'm the Phantom.
No, but, I mean, he's versatile, but I guess he's just always the same person in that same accent, you know, which I can respect. I mean, I'm sure there's somewhere in the contract he's like, I'm not going to change my accent at all.
Which is probably for the best.
I mean, he probably can.
Yeah.
If you've seen those, what is it, Olympus Has Fallen? Like, whenever he tries, when he's American Mike, it always just, he loses it halfway through every fight scene. It's kind of great. Mm-hmm. He's also Dracula in Dracula 2000. That piece of garbage.
Oh, that was bad. Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that horror movie.
So did everyone. Let's be honest.
For the best. Yeah.
Good soundtrack, though.
Yes, good soundtrack. Speaking of good soundtracks, yes. Phantom was 2004.
Okay.
He's in that wretched Timeline movie. That's a Stay Tuned and a Half. That Michael Crichton, like, time travel to, like... speaking of...
Paul Walker was in that, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Okay, that's where I remember him from. Okay.
Like everyone on the planet, I've been watching... I watched WandaVision, and, you know, there's those memes about where you first met Paul Bettany.
Yeah.
And I was like... Wasn't he the hallucination in Beautiful Mind?
Yeah.
That's
most people
saw. He's great in that. I guess speaking of medieval shit, he's also in The Knight's Tale, right?
Yep, that's how I knew him. Straight, saw his ass first.
Yep. He's good.
Yeah, he's good. He's good.
Let Paul Bettany do something other than wear face paint. Come on, guys. Let's get into the movie. We learn immediately that we're siding with the villains in the movie when they straight up murder that messenger and everyone that comes with him. For no reason.
I will say this, though. I will say this because I like to argue. Leonidas got his okay from his wife to kick the Persians in the hole. He looked at his wife. She said, yeah, do it. And then he kicked them down. So respect to the enemy.
Okay, fair. Mm-hmm. But you know what you say? No. You don't kill the messenger. That's literally the thing. The one thing they tell you about messengers.
Yeah.
Well, they say explicitly in this that, you know... You're saying what the king says, so I'm treating you as the king, and I'm going to kill you.
He did.
I mean,
fair warning.
He came in through other leaders' heads and saying that, hey, if you don't... Okay, I feel like I'm conflicted now that I realize I've been rooting for the enemy. It's like that one scene from American History X when they're playing basketball, and then you're rooting for the skinheads for some reason. Yeah. The musical. That's how I feel right now. Yeah. That's how I feel. Oh, my God. I feel conflicted as a black man watching this movie rooting for the enemy.
But it was like watching this and the scene happens and this was like the trailer scene,
this
right?
This was it.
Yeah. Yeah, like he's like, we've chosen to ignore you. And then he kicks him and it's slow-mo, this dude just kind of hovering in the air. I mean, you realize the Greeks were great engineers for building a bottomless pit, I guess?
For kicking their enemies into. I mean, of course, it makes sense.
Kind of want the dude to just come out and go, fatality. Like this.
Yeah. There should have been an end credit scene where they end up in Australia.
Just some dudes looking around. Like.
They'd be like, oi, another guy came out. But that was the scene everyone in my high school was, you know, screaming down, like, this is Sparta! And I mean, like...
Of course they were.
That was it, because that was the trailer.
Well, I was going to say, you didn't even have to see the movie to know that line.
Yeah, true.
See, that was the thing. Okay, so... so many complicated emotions about this. Mm-hmm. So, it's very clear that Zack Snyder wanted to appeal to a certain type of audience. Young men who were straight. Okay, and that sounds ironic.
Okay.
Okay?
Walk me
through
it.
Considering the amount of queer baiting in this movie.
The abs.
The half-naked man.
Right.
The sexiness.
Right.
The close-up, the lingering shots
on
abs with sweat running down them.
Queer baiting. Was it like that back then? Was people trying to, you know, hold homosexual tenet?
Let's talk about Sparta and the irony of the Spartans being homophobic. Because...
God, help me.
Oh, my God. Okay, so...
I'm trying to learn.
He opens it up with... I think the first one was... Leonidas calls the Athenians philosophers and boy lovers.
Yeah, that's, yeah. That line is so casual that I was like,
the Athenians have also rejected your offer. Those philosophers and boy touchers or boy lovers. And you're just like, what, fresh hell?
I must have missed that line the first time I saw it.
No, but you know, to be fair, you know, he lifted it straight from Frank Miller's, you know, graphic novel. Right. That was a line straight from there.
Again, which goes to Zack Snyder's being like, hey, that sounds cool, let me put it in. Right. Doesn't realize what it
is. Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, you know, later on, they were joking about how, who is the greater man, and apparently one of them said, well, you've been offering your backside to the thespians, you know, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yo, the subtle penalties I didn't know about.
Yes, yeah. Trust me, when you're queer, you pick up on those things like crazy. So you see this throughout. You see the aggressive maleness, the lingering sort of toxic masculinity, but not toxic masculinity.
Right.
This is one of those Baptist ministers making the straightest film he's ever made because he's secretly gay.
So this is a conversion movie you talk about?
Well, no, this is a movie by someone who's like, I'm so not gay that I'm going to make a not gay movie, and it turns out gayer somehow.
So let's talk a little bit further. I did a little bit of research because Charlie Rose does his research.
Mm-hmm. Tell him, Charlie.
apparently, in a there was an interview that came out right after the movie came out. It was in Entertainment Weekly. Zack Snyder admits that the homosexual undertones were intended to make young straight males in the audience uncomfortable because, and here's the quote. What's more scary to a 20-year-old boy than a giant god king who wants to have his way with you?
And he is the blackest person in the movie, except for the guy who turns into nothing but smiling teeth.
Yes.
Mm. And, right? Like, this
is... and it gets worse because Xerxes is very clearly villainous queer-coded.
Oh, dude.
And I'm just like...
This is
first
like,
of all, wait, Saxon, that character, the actor is—he's white, but for the longest time, I found out I thought he was
Brazilian.
Black. Brazilian. Okay, all right, fair enough. Goldface. Okay.
Yeah.
Goldface.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with queer coding?
I am not.
Nor. Okay. So, queer coding is when you sort of make subtle pushes, hints that someone is gay. Okay.
Okay.
Now, the dark side of queer coding, because queer coding was a tool that you would send invisible signs, you know, to your audience that you are trying to put a queer person in, but you are not being explicit.
So like Kevin Spacey and why he always plays the villains.
Yeah, well, okay, so...
He's got a mask.
Let me loop back here.
Okay.
One of the dark sides of queer coding is they often make the villain to be a queer-coded individual.
Okay. Okay, Kevin. Okay.
Think about it.
Kevin. Okay.
Scar from Disney, from The Lion King.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And Jafar as well.
Jafar.
Kind of lispy, effete, like,
basically,
well-dressed.
Basically, it's these men who are very effeminate and very cerebral.
Right.
And, you know, they just... They queer code, okay?
I did not know this.
Yeah.
Wait, that is gayist. So they're
gayist. Hold on,
so Hollywood is trying to portray that all, real, that all the villains, that all the villains, they make them a little homophobic?
Well, think about it.
We can even think your own generation. Team Rocket from Pokemon, right?
Yo.
Dude, like, super effeminate, like... And remember, like, he's paired up with a beautiful buxom woman type, and all he's interested in Ash, right? Like, if you want to flip genders, Ursula from Little Mermaid.
Yes.
Right? Like, it was literally based on a drag character, right?
Right.
But, Charlie, we're going to watch movies together, and you're going to point me all these movies out,
totally.
And I'm going to point you all the racist things.
Perfect.
And we can do this.
You bring up a very good point. When you grow up as a certain, like, I grew up queer.
This might make the
cut. And I guess you grew up black.
Yes, I grew up black.
But
I assume we...
But no, seriously,
you see things
that other people don't.
Right.
And it cuts you deeper than other people. And it's... It's a whole concept of microaggressions in my mind.
Okay.
But anyway, the point is that this movie simultaneously queer baits and queer codes villains.
That's right.
It's this movie is, from a queer standpoint, it is reprehensible. And it put it all into this package of sexy men to draw on the gays.
And the funny thing is, it doesn't need any of it. It's a dude fighting movie, right?
Right.
It's not... Oh God, you don't need, like...
Well, I mean, it's... I told you
I had opinions on this movie. Yeah. And boom, there they are.
Yeah. So the guy we're talking about is Rodrigo Santoro. He just kind of plays a beefcake in a lot of Sword and Sandals. He's also in that Ben-Hur remake as Jesus in 2016. That one that no one saw. But yeah, I mean, he's fine in this. He returns as Xerxes in the 2014 version, which I did not see. But yeah. Oh, he's in Shay. He plays Raul Castro in Shay. I like that that 9-hour movie that's broken up in half.
Yeah, I saw that all in one sitting, and man, that was rough.
Yeah, it's too much for one sitting. I also liked. I'm getting way off topic. So let's do this. The Spartans kick him in the hole. They then go to the Oracle, and a bunch of old men lick a woman who's mostly naked.
Mm.
You're shaking your head like that's not what happened.
I watched it with my girlfriend, and you know, when you see scene like naked girl, and I'm just like, is it cool? Am I not supposed to? Yeah. I feel like they should. Okay, they have lupus scars, or what did they have?
Well, let's be honest. Everyone in this movie who's not the 300 Spartans are hideous human beings.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like, this is what Leonardo DiCaprio's face should look like after they took the Iron Mask off him.
Right. Right. This is what the Joker would have looked like in real life in that 89 Batman movie.
Right.
Like, yeah. Just scars and horrible stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, they're like, should we go and attack Xerxes or whatever? And the Oracle says, essentially, no. And these old men are licking this young girl who's doped out of her mind.
For whatever reason.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Also a Frank Miller staple. This is all, because this is also all over Sin City, like, and... You know, Zack Snyder. This is very Zack Snyder-y too.
I'm guessing in the comic book that was an underage girl.
Oh, and she was also a prostitute because all women in Frank Miller comics are prostitutes.
Yeah.
They gave her crack. That's why she was dancing like that.
Dude,
probably.
It's crack.
Yeah.
It's just like it is a really weird scene because what they'll do is not just slow motion, but it'll be slow and then it'll speed up and then it'll be slow and you're just like, what fresh hell am I watching?
Again, something that looks cool but means nothing.
It is.
Yeah.
It's film school nonsense, right? Like it's like all tricks. He bought that one pack in Final Cut Pro and he wants to get his money's worth.
Yeah.
So he's like, because the Oracle said no. You can't do this. So he's like, look, I'm going on a walk with 300 of my closest friends. For whatever reason.
Yeah.
After one of two very unnecessary sex scenes.
Yep.
Play the heavy man, come on. You gotta put your foot down at some point.
Yeah, she gotta stop. I mean, like, you gotta make that money, I guess, because I only know it from two things. This and Game of Thrones.
Yep.
And that's not it.
She is. She's in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
She's probably also Nick in that. I have not watched it all.
There was a whole scene where they, some high priest.
Wait, a woman in Game of Thrones is naked?
Yeah, but this is the one
only when you have to get the plot out real quick.
Yeah, that was the one that she had the bell and she was going around the house. She was like saying, ho! Ding, 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 ho! Ding, ding, ding,
a
ding.
A hole lives in your castle! Janet Rossi, 4A!
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, just looking at it, she does a lot of voice acting. Probably because she was sick after working with Zack Snyder for a bit.
Yeah.
She was literally in a movie called Poor, where she played Mom.
Huh! Well, alright.
Which, if you ask Sigmund Freud, same thing.
Yeah, that's right.
So, let's talk about the most interesting...
Okay.
At least to me.
Yeah.
Face that we saw in this movie. Michael Fassbender.
Fassbender. Michael.
Everyone loves Fassbender.
Yeah. Fassbender is the hype man.
Right.
And Leonidas says something, he goes, yeah, come on. And by the way, if you're standing next to him, you wouldn't be anywhere else. This dude just wants to die. It's like suicide by Xerxes. You know, you're like, no. You stand over there. You draw the arrow fire, man. But he's just, I mean, you would talk about gay stuff. the way he's looking at Gerard Butler, he's like, yeah, buddy, come on. it's really like, I'm gonna outman you right now. Like it's intense, that love he's got for his buddy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he loves his king. Man, he loves his king. Mm-hmm. Was there any hints of homoerotic from there?
Oh, please.
Probably.
When the only time that there was no homoerotism was when what's his name was boning his wife.
Yeah,
Leonidas was boning Gorga.
True. Okay.
Gorga was a terrible name. I'm sure it's the real name.
I honestly don't think that name is ever said in the movie, is it?
No, actually not.
Yeah.
And then he just rips off all these good shots from Gladiator, which is a fine movie. It's not a great movie. It's a fine movie. But like the Elysian Fields scene, like,
yeah,
there's no sun in this movie.
The thing is, it's funny you bring that up because it evokes a similar. Okay, there's a certain type of guy that puts that movie and 300 on repeat on silent while they're playing Call of Duty. I'm just saying, I painted a picture for you.
You painted a very accurate picture.
Well, to give Gladiator credit, you know, when he finds his wife and son dead at the beginning, you know, he fucking cries. There's like snot coming out. In 300, they say, you can't say your wife, you love your wife or else you're a pussy.
That's right. It's weird, right?
It's like the ultimate manly movie. You can't even tell your wife you love her.
300. Toxic masculinity on display.
Yeah.
Dude, I just... Rewatching this, I don't want to say who's this movie for, because I tragically know exactly who it's for, and they just stormed the Capitol last month.
Oh my God.
Right? Like, that's what that feels like to a team. Right? Like, this advertised in, like, Guns and Ammo magazine. Like, they bought out the back cover. This is sold at that shop that sells Confederate flags right next to the register.
That would explain why the QAnon shaman had that organic diet, because they probably wanted to look like a spy.
Oh, gosh. By the way, have you seen without the headgear?
No.
He's ugly motherfucker.
Explains why he had that headgear. Anyway. Something I want to talk about is how the Spartans just shit on the Arcadians. You know, like they just kept calling them the like sissies the entire time.
They did.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, hey, we just brought all our people. You know, and Spartan was like, we brought all our soldiers. And I'm like, that's kind of sucky. The people that are literally going to die for you calling them pussies, you know, I felt like it wasn't necessary, you know?
Yeah.
And we do have 300 Spartans. We also have like 7,000 Acadians, which they're not in this movie other than to say, we should retreat. Which you should retreat when you're, like, getting flanked by an entire army. But, you know, Leonidas is stupid.
Yeah, they're there for comparison reason, to show how truly, you know, amazing the Spartans are by always, you know, being cowards. The
Spartans are.
Yeah.
God help me. This is such a weird movie. But, yeah, okay, so where do we go from here, Charlie?
Okay, so 300 men go on a walk.
They go on a walk.
So they meet up with the Arcadians, as we mentioned, and basically they're talking strategy. They're basically going to put them through the Hot Gates Pass.
Hot Gates, right.
Basically, it's this narrow pass that will cause, basically give them a strategy. The problem is there's a goat path that could cause them to be flanked. Okay? And that's where Ephialtes,
something like that. Yeah, it's Ephialtes.
The guy with the deformity.
Yes.
Yeah. The monster. The literal monster.
Yeah.
The literal monster.
Yeah. The birth
of this is also the most ableist movie of all time.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing. He's got this huge hunchback. He comes to Leonidas. He says, hey, I want to fight. I want to fight for the glory and honor of my father, of Sparta. I want to do it all. And Leonidas is like, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
I mean, that was sort of a dick move because I get the strategy. They work as a phalanx. He can't operate as a phalanx. But there's 7,000 other fighters that he could have put him
you
with.
You could have
put him back.
Yeah.
Put him in the back.
Yeah.
I mean,
he could stab some motherfuckers, but he couldn't protect himself.
Exactly.
But I mean, again, like, it's so on the nose that the one person who's going to betray them is the one who's not only mentally deformed, because who would betray a Spartan, but but also physically deformed.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
But I can't emphasize enough that these 300 specimens, like beautiful men, and then everyone else is a monster. Like,
yes.
There's a dude, there's that crab guy who cuts off the head of one of the generals, and you're just like...
Yeah, they're
so
either,
that's fiction, right? They didn't really. Cause I mean, you look okay, maybe. You never know.
Well, what they did is they basically took all the ugly, monstrous people and they made them bad.
Right.
They took all the swarthy people.
God, this movie
and they
fucking...
made them bad.
That's.
They took, and then my favorite are the men who were all in black, but the whites of their teeth and eyes. Shine.
This movie's racist as fuck. Oh my god.
Right?
Oh my god. But again,
it is homophobic as fuck. It is racist as fuck.
Zack Snyder. What the fuck?
Shame on you, Zack Snyder.
But it's just, there's nothing subtle about it.
Like, no.
And
no.
Like, we do have the first interaction.
Once the veil has been lifted, you can't ever unsee
the glass is broken in my head right
now.
Yeah. Like, I'll have these notes.
So, of course, Ebialtes goes to Xerxes and says, hey, there's this pass. This is what they plan. And Xerxes says, if you worship me, if you bow before me, I will or submit. Because that's another thing.
Right.
It's
all about
submission.
Yeah.
And how it's manly to not submit.
That's right.
Okay? So
yeah. To not get on your knees.
Right? Exactly.
Very specifically.
Very specifically. You have, it was not just submission. It was get on your knees.
There was a line that the John Butler's character was like, you need to kneel down to me. He's like, I've been kneeling all day. My knees kind of hurt, thighs and
exactly.
shit.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sports injury.
And I'm just sport injury. And I'm just like, will you do something else?
so this is all happening, of course, on the second day, the end of the second day.
That's right. They should have, like, placards.
Yeah. Because the first and the second day, they have brutalized these armies.
That's right.
Brutalized them. Okay? And their strategy is holding up. And so... Xerxes is worried.
Yeah.
Okay? And it's very clear that's happening. Of course, Ephialtes goes to him. Xerxes agrees. They then plan. The Acadians all leave.
Right.
And basically, at the end, all the Spartans are dead. But they did accomplish the one noble feat of making the god bleed.
That's right. But I mean, we can kind of get through this. Like, David Wenham, who eventually is our bard, he's our narrator, right?
Yep.
Like,
Great voice.
I mean,
great
this
narrator.
Works, and it reads like a comic book, because this would be the caption over the frame, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like, so, we first have just the light infantry. They just get slaughtered. And they build a wall of them, like, 500 people high, which...
Oh, yeah.
For no reason. They just drop it on top of one dude. Then we get the immortals. Right? And as the immortals come in, we see this monster. He is chained by the neck. He is 18 feet tall. I don't know. And he's covered in scars.
Yeah.
Because everyone who is not a Spartan is a monster. Somehow. Yeah. But yeah, like, this is where the movie immediately gets boring. Because we've spent 45 minutes talking about them fighting. And then they fight. And then they fight. And then they fight. And then a senator rapes the king's wife. And then they fight.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I know you got to count up these action scenes, but that is not necessary for any of this. Because that's not in the comics.
Well,
exactly.
There was a very heartful scene when the captain's son gets decapitated.
And the captain cries, but he also avenges his son.
True. And we'll go back to the okay. From you made me woke just by realizing this type of deal. But
sure.
The scene where the captain, he says, I don't regret bringing my son to battle. The only thing I regret is not telling him that I loved him. And that to me hit me so hard.
Yeah, that was a genuinely emotional scene.
Which makes sense. Why they would want to mask their feminine side.
Let's talk about toxic masculinity. And the only time that men are allowed to show vulnerability is when their children die or their wife dies.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's the only time.
Yeah.
So, yes, you're right, but it's playing into a trope.
Well, mm-hmm. But it's also like, what movie are you trying to make?
Oh, yeah.
You know, like,
absolutely.
It's bad enough that, like, you know, that Leonidas has a son, so he's thinking about his son, that's fine. But, like, this movie is blessedly under 2 hours.
Just barely.
But you could make it shorter. Like,
oh, yeah.
A 90-minute movie would have been fine, and you don't have to rape Lena Head.
Her entire subplot could have been cut out. I mean,
well, yeah. And Nick pointed out, she's barely in the comics.
Yeah.
Right. But, I mean, like, if that's what you want to do and just make an action set piece movie, you're fine. You're most of the way there. Like, and I don't know what these other 300 Spartans are. We get, like, 12 guys, right?
Yeah.
And 3 senators who are assholes. And even these senators are ugly motherfuckers. Like, they look like Tim Burton characters with, like deep, like, because the contrast is so high on the film stock, all you see are their wrinkles and beards. And these are some bad fake beards.
My friends.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, whatever.
But, so anyway, you know, the way the story, the real story goes, is that they were supposed, the 300 were supposed to be the advance.
Right.
To allow Sparta to finish celebrating Carnia.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. And then the others would go. They didn't anticipate that they would actually do any fighting. They would just be an advance team, and then they went. This story from the comics, from the movie, they decide to send the rest of the army after they discover that the senator who was fighting against all their actions was bought by Xerxes.
Right.
Because he died and he had Xerxes' gold.
Just happened to have it on him.
Yeah, just happened to have it on.
I mean, you bring your bride money. And that's such a thing, like, so the dude, again, rapes Queen Gorgo, and then he goes to the floor of the Senate to essentially call her a whore, because we were forgetting it was a Frank Miller comic, so we gotta really establish this. And then she pulls out a knife, and Julius Caesars him right on the floor, right? Like, she stabs him right on the floor of the Senate, and then his bribe money falls out, and all we see is this CGI coin land.
She hits him with the line that he hit it with her, was saying, you're not gonna, when he did the undoable act, saying that you're not gonna like this and I'm not your queen. And boom.
That's right.
So, yeah. No, props to her for throwing that line out. It was actually pretty good.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, and like what Charlie's saying, this battle is not the battle. The battle's happening with the Athenians. Right?
Yes.
The Battle of Marathon.
Yes.
And the Athenians win. And what happens are, Xerxes is now retreating, and he's trying to get his land, right? So the hotgates, in this context, makes sense, because he has perhaps 250,000 men who are now trying to land on a beach, but they've cut off the beach. And so it's really easy to fight one-on-one, right?
Yep.
While the Athenian navy is coming up to surround them and destroy them, right? This is all they're supposed to do is stop, and they thought they'd be able to just stop. Turns out there's an actual battle at Thermopylae. But, like, this is like, we're going to die for no reason, and you're just like, why? Like, this is, without any context, this just seems like, we're going to be stupid and big. And they, and they died to the last man.
And they did.
Which of course, is even better, because David Wenham's character, Dilios, or whatever his name is, leaves halfway through the movie. And yet he's still narrating, so he's just making up. There was nary a crab person. He's just like, and they had huge crab people. And there was a ninja turtle or two. And you're just like, okay.
All right. Magic.
Meanwhile, he's just perving outside of Leonidas' bedroom. He's like, because he was narrating them having sex at one point, too.
Which is a little disturbing. But, you know, hey, you know.
Dilios of Pervo. But, yeah. You
right
there,
Connor? No, I'm just realizing all these... Okay, not only did it have homophobic and racial tendencies, but you just made up a good point. This was told by... It was narrated. The story was narrated by. So, you know, and he was told to tell, you know, the story of 300. And I'm wondering, when he was on top of the hilltop before he had sent him away, saying, hey, tell, this, you know, I fucked my wife and stuff, you know, tell her I gave it to her good. You know,
by the way, that is totally, like, no homo locker room, like, you know, I totally banged my wife yesterday, yeah. And, like, twice.
Yeah, yeah.
There was, like, a montage and everything.
Yeah. And tell him I was looking at the moon outside naked, too.
And that is a late addition to this movie. It screams, like, dude, you just made the gayest movie of all time. Can you do something about this? And he's like, what if he has sex with his wife in one scene? Good. Okay.
Excellent.
I see Academy Awards in your future, son. Right. And there were never Academy Awards in his future. I'm just surprised people got out of this. And I mean that in the best way possible, because I actually really like Gerard Butler in a lot of things. But this was, like, the beginning of him figuring out who he was. Because, like, he was in those rom-coms in the early 2000s. Like, he doesn't need to be in a rom-com.
Nope.
He just needs to be a beefcake with a gun. Don't mess with that accent. He's fine. Just call him American Mike and give him a gun and let him protect Aaron Eckhart. Like, that's fine. That's what he's going to do. Obviously, we talked about Fassbender getting out of this alive.
Yeah.
But, like,
Fassbender is, like, the only one who realizes how fucking stupid this is. And he's like, yeah!
Dude, he is like, woo, scrum! Go give me some Xerxes!
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, like, other than that, like, it's just these weird visuals. Like, the giant Xerxes looking down slowly massaging Leonidas's shoulders like he's a, you know...
Again,
wrestling coach.
What's more scary to a 20-year-old boy
I know.
Than a giant god king who wants to have his way with you? Direct quote from Zack Snyder. Fuck you very much, Zack Snyder.
It is. It's not subtle. None of this is subtle. It's so funny that this movie is what it is.
Huh.
Yeah.
No, I'm realizing this because I remember when I was 15, whenever I watched this, and one of the guys I was watching it with pointed this out, the scene where all the arrows just come, the final blow, and then he's just laying there. He said, not one arrow touched his dick.
That's right.
Not one arrow hit his dick.
By the way, did you notice he died in a crucifix pose?
Oh, yeah, completely.
Oh, my goodness.
So, by the way, you may have seen this, because I used to teach with this movie, but that's a shot 100% out of the movie Hero. With the Jet Li movie, where the Chinese army fires like 6 million arrows at the sky, and for that movie, they literally did it. And there's a school of calligraphy, and like the students are just getting torn apart by these arrows.
Yeah.
But that's what they did. They blackened the sky with arrows, like they said. My favorite part is when that emissary comes up to the Spartans at the beginning, right? And he goes, and of course they kill him.
I
think Fassbender cuts off his arm,
right.
Oh, yeah. And he goes, we'll blacken the sky with the arrows. And when they do, Fassbender's like, holy shit, they did it.
He said
we'll just hide in the shadows. Yeah. In which they did with their shields, which is kind of, and he laughed at it too. Yeah.
And he's laughing, and again, just a bunch of teethy Greek men, just like, just like chattering teeth. It is something.
The whitest Greek man you'll ever see.
Oh my god.
Yep.
You couldn't find a single
Greek man. The whitest hairless Greek man you'll ever see.
That's right, they have to shave. Men are hairless.
Yeah, exactly.
They are well greased.
Yep.
Well, I will say the one good thing to come out of this movie, for years and still to this day, when you go to Dragon Con, you see at least a couple dozen hot men dressed up like 300.
Like, they can actually pull it off?
Oh my god, yes they can.
Because, I mean, come on, you go to Comic Con, there are some people who shouldn't be wearing certain costumes.
Outstanding, yes, but there are people who pride themselves on this.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's only a couple dozen. Probably about maybe
300.
At most, I've never seen more than like 20 or 30 of them.
I got
Like, there are pictures with all of them. Beautiful. In fact, I've got one on my phone. I will show you after we finish the podcast.
Thank you.
But going back to...
ever since... Yeah, yeah.
But totally, I mean, that is one of the nice things that came out of it. Funny. Those who can't pull off that costume, they were wearing a bath towel and a Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket cut out like a Spartan helmet.
Nice. There you go.
And they are more self-aware than Zack Snyder.
But anyway, it's this movie.
Speaking of, like, they have bedazzled, like, rhinos in this, too, and elephants.
No. Well, that's, okay, again, queer coding, because, you know, the Persians are putting jewelry and, like, fabulousness on everything. Yeah. I mean, Xerxes was one step away from being a freaking drag queen.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, and Xerxes and that rhino have the same piercer, because everything is the same.
If he had a stuffed bra, he would have whipped out probably a shirt.
He's this close to Frankenfurter.
Okay, this is making sense to me, because when the Spartan with the birth defect, the hunch, came to Xerxes, and he was surrounded uncomfortably around, I guess, an orgy. And, like, the two girls that were kissing had deformities.
It's weird.
Not only weird, but they like everyone's mentioned, they wanted to paint the picture of people that weren't white males ugly and deformity and stuff like that.
You could just have an army, though. Like, they go out of the way, because guess what? If you're Greek and you see an elephant from India for the first time, it is a monster. You don't have to say, like...
Yeah, he called it a monster.
You know, like, literally, it's a monster. Like, that's why it was so effective when Hannibal did it with the Romans. Like, what do you do? These are literal monsters. You don't also have to have an 8-foot-tall dude that you're chaining up like he's Killer Croc. Mm. Right? Like, you know, so you don't have to have, like... what are they called? The immortals? That are just these silvered, like, masks with nothing behind them. Like, no eyes, no skin, just, like, kind of blackness beneath them. It's really weird. The production design is cool, but it's weird.
I was getting a lot of Lord of the Rings vibes when the Million Army was coming down. You know, very Three Kings vibes. You know
I mean, those epic, beautiful, like, landscape shots of, like, hundreds of thousands of people ready to just fight. Visually, I was amazed. It was spectacular. I loved it. Mm-hmm.
The Lord of the Rings vibes didn't hurt with the fact that David Wenham was in it, and he's the guy who plays Bean's brother, Something Amir. Yeah. It's always Something Amir, Faramir.
He's a rando British guy starring in all the epic, like, sword and sorcery movies.
Yeah,
it's that voice of his, though.
Well, yeah.
He's an Aussie doing a strong English accent. He was also in Van Helsing, which we've done.
Oh, yeah.
He's Carl. He's the guy who shows up and, like, the weapons guy.
Oh, yeah. Like, the cute.
Yeah.
The friar. Yep. Yeah.
You're coming with me. Why?
Oh, well.
He's also in the Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man Tells No Tale.
Of course he is.
And the movie Australia.
Hugh Jackman. He's an Aussie.
He is Australian.
He's actually that huge Jackman movie that's also 9 hours
that
long.
That starred every Hollywood star that was actually Australian.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, snap. And Moulin Rouge. Okay. Did I say that name right?
Sure. That's a stay tuned and a half. I love that movie.
What's that?
Moulin Rouge.
Oh, gosh.
I say Motley Rouge.
Yep. That is the weirdest jukebox musical in existence. Mm. Like, don't they do Nirvana at one point?
Yes. Oh, I remember going, what the hell is going on? Okay. That has to be a stay tuned.
Oh, you know, we will. We'll do it. Okay. During Pride?
Musical month.
Oh.
I'm just saying, you needed a musical. Zadu, and...
Dominic West is in Chicago. He's Fred Paisley. That is a movie.
There you go. Yeah. Our own little myopia triple threat.
There we go. We can wrap this up. We've talked about 300 enough. This is a weird freaking movie. Mm-hmm. Charlie, final thoughts?
Hated it. So, basically, the homophobia... the obviously queer baiting just made me so enraged. I hated it. Yes, it was beautiful. Yes, it had some picturesque scenes. Yes, it was a Frank Miller comic book. But I just did not care for how it made me feel.
Sure.
Other people can love it. And
they're wrong.
I won't judge you harshly, but I will judge you. But yeah, I'm done. It's gone.
Now you never have to see it again.
Yep, exactly.
Nor?
I like coming here, and I like... I like coming here, and I like realizing the things that I don't realize at first. And
And from the comments to everyone here, I thought I liked the movie. But then, like, my inner wokeness is not allowing me to like this movie for all the points everyone's made. You know, because, like, damn.
Yeah.
No.
Buddy?
From a design point, it's great. I would say if you can find a version where all the dialogue has been cut out, you'll have a blast.
Spanish neorealism. It's just all black and white.
Yeah, I mean, it's great until people open their mouths. That's not our throwback to all the gay panic in this movie. But it's a movie that could have been great if it had just stuck to action scenes, but it tries to say something, whether it realizes it or not, and it just shoots itself in the foot. So, yeah, if you can watch it without dialogue, go for it. But if not, it's going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I'll put it this way. I think we talked about Ridley Scott. Like, Ridley Scott's version could have been interesting because he had just done Gladiator 6 years before. Like, I'm fine with Sword and Sandal. It's just, Zack Snyder should not be a director. He's a good cinematographer. He gets, he has an eye for cool shots. But, like, the other problem is there's no pacing or story here. Like, this movie is shockingly boring. We talked about action, but it's 2 hours, and I just kept checking my watch. Don't do that. If you want to fill it with story, but do anything. This movie is a slog. I remember not liking it, but thinking, well, this was a fun day at the Cineplex when I first saw it. This is just so boring. There's just nothing here. I'm shocked they made a sequel, although I guess it's telling that it was 8 years later. But anyway, that's it. Tune in, like I said, if you're join the Patreon, because we're going to be doing Watchmen, which is, that one is 3 hours. That is a 3-hour movie. But until next time, guys, thanks for listening, writing, reviewing, sharing us, and we're out. Thanks, guys.
My Opium Movies is a production of Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Sedis. The theme song is Sherf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find his music on comtech.com. It is registered under the Creative 4 license. Our regular panelists are Matthew Quinn, Daniel Sudis, Nick Hoffman, and Jeremy Reigel. Thanks for listening. Please support our Patreon at patreon.com/myopia. Thanks, guys.